So there's some real bad things happening to our fishing fleet, as we all know, and it's been going on for a number of years thanks to the radical Jane Lubchenco starting it all up. And, of course, eventually you have to thank Senator John Kerry for that gem, as he suggested to the president that she'd be a great administrator for NOAA. And it has not gotten much better. Even though they got her out of there because she was so controversial, things really haven't changed enough. In fact, our next guest is going to talk about a lawsuit. Two New Bedford fishermen are suing the federal government over it. Stephen Schwartz, welcome to the Ken Pippin Show, and I appreciate your time this morning.
It's good to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Tell the folks about your organization, Steve. I know that you guys do a lot of things like this, and it's you're absolutely a necessity here.
Well, thanks a lot for that. We're an organization, the group is called Cause of Action. We're based in Washington, D.C. We're what you call government accountability nonprofit law firm. There are lots of circumstances today in America where agencies of the federal government exercise their discretion in ways that are terrible for personal liberty, for economic freedoms, and it's really an immense problem, kind of a structural problem with American government that's hurtful to American society. What Cause of Action does, and we're fairly unique in this role, is we find situations like what's happening today with the fishing industry in the Northeast, where actions by the federal government are going to be terrible for individuals, for whole industries in this case. And we represent individuals pro bono. Sometimes we bring our own lawsuits, but often we're doing pro bono representations. In cases where we have the ability to kind of both rescue individuals and industries from government overreach, government overregulation, government abuse of discretion, but also establishing principles of administrative law, principles of constitutional law, that have the potential to kind of rework the way the federal government works in ways that are more protective of liberty.
Yeah. If you look at the specifics of what is being asked of these fishermen, I mean, I'm sure that you're not, before taking on this case, you weren't an expert on these issues, but you must have found this just jaw-dropping, some of the things that are expected of them.
Absolutely. The first time that I heard about this, I remember this, I was sitting in the office of our executive director, and he tells me that fishermen in the Northeast are required to basically carry a government minder on their boats, and that now they're going to be required to pay for them. The first thing I said was, that's outrageous. And the more we dug into the facts and the more we dug into the law, just the more outrageous it came to seem. Now, I, like you guessed, I wasn't familiar with the Northeast crownfish industry before this. I didn't know anything about Magnus and Stevens. Our organization, though, interestingly enough, has actually done quite good stuff with fishery law. We represented Sandy Yates in the Supreme Court. We've represented a couple of other, we worked with Sandy Yates in the Supreme Court, excuse me. So this is, it's kind of finally in our bailiwick to get involved in the groundfish case, but it was a great opportunity to learn about this and hopefully be able to do some good.
I think 100% of the listeners would agree it's important that the oceans have viable stocks, that, you know, we do what we can in our limitations to make sure that the fish are going to return in numbers and repopulate, and we won't affect the food chain and the overall status of the ocean, and yada, yada. But there are measures that go far beyond this. Let's talk about, for example, how things were before these big changes, and then now what's expected of them. What do you think are the biggest problems, as you see it, as far as the impositions on these fishermen?
Well, first of all, I'd like to second that point that you just made about conservation. What we keep on hearing from our clients and from other interested fishermen, from the people we've talked to up in the Northeast, nobody is more interested in conservation than the individuals in the industry who depend on the fishing stocks for their livelihood. So they care about conservation, and they've been active in conservation measures. But like you say, what's being required of them goes far beyond that. I can't speak right now to the industry as a whole. I keep on hearing about, just almost every day I hear about something new in the industry that just strikes me as horribly burdensome for the industry, horribly inappropriate, extremely dangerous for these fishermen individually or for their way of life. What I'm most familiar with is this APSE monitor funding requirement where these fishermen are required to invite these federal contractors out on their boats, which is terribly intrusive and itself legally suspect in lots of different ways.
Right.
And then on top of that now, to be required to pay for these monitors, even when everybody agrees from the top of the agency, as far as I can tell, all the way down to the regional administrators and fishermen themselves. Everyone agrees the fishermen simply can't pay for it. And yet the agency, and even in the agency's own estimation, more than half of the fishermen will simply go out of existence, go out of business. And yet the agency is, for whatever the reason, kind of sleepwalking into this world where it's just going to take its regulated industry, which it is charged by statute with not regulating and preserving, and yet it's going to simply destroy most of it.
Well, I have to think the climate on board. You know, you've got somebody on board. I've been telling my audience, it's almost like being forced to pay for a state trooper to sit in your back seat in case you speed.
It is very much like that, and my understanding is that that's the way the fishermen experience it. And it's not just like having a state trooper riding shotgun with you, because the deck of a boat can be a very dangerous place.
Yeah, get out of the way. Everything's got to be super efficient, and it's fast-paced and dangerous, and sure.
Exactly. And so if you have somebody there on the boat who isn't familiar with it, who oftentimes thinks that if you're telling him to get out of the way, he thinks you're trying to hide something from him, and yet there he is, a danger to himself and others, and it's extremely intrusive. Furthermore, what we keep on hearing is that the presence of these monitors has various other kinds of consequences. For example, one of our clients was talking about how these monitors are there for the ostensible purpose of fishery conservation. They're there to a lot of them will collect samples, collect measurements, examine what is the bycatch, and so on. And yet in the process of doing it, they actually kill the fish and the aquatic wildlife before when it would have been possible if the fishermen had been left to their own devices to be able to save it. So not only is it intrusive for the fishermen, but it's actually, at least on some level, in some circumstances, counterproductive for the conservation goals that they're supposed to be furthering.
Chris, yeah, you know, the other part of them thinking about this is, you know, they go out for about 10 days, maybe sometimes longer, on these fishing trips, and you live on that boat. So you're also taking up space on that boat that, you know, that another fisherman either would be living in or they would have more space individually. And so it's got to be very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's tight quarters.
I would imagine these observers don't really like the climate on these boats.
I can't imagine they do. I haven't talked with any of them personally. Anecdotally, from talking to the fishermen, my understanding is that the burnout rate among the observers and monitors is fairly high.
Yeah. You know, these fishermen aren't going to hold back. I'm sure there's some verbal abuse going on.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And obviously we
those decks can get slippery.
We don't sanction or condone any of that.
Certainly not.
People need to get along, and people need to be nice to each other when they're doing their jobs and everything. And I know that there is There's kind of you hear about inappropriate harassment that sometimes takes place.
It's a natural, I think it's natural.
It probably goes both ways, too.
No doubt it does.
Have you gotten
my understanding is that some of the monitors can be really kind of aggressive with the fishermen, too.
Sure. Counselor, where are you in terms of the legal procedure? Have you gotten into the discovery phase where you're doing depositions with some of these federal agencies?
I doubt that we're actually going to end up in that kind of posture. Where we are now is this. This week in the District of New Hampshire, we filed a complaint that alleges the various kinds of legal flaws in the FFG monitor program and in the industry funding requirements specifically. We also concurrently with filing that complaint, we filed a motion for what's called a preliminary injunction, which is, so basically the result of this is that we've put our claims in front of the court and we filed a motion where ideally we would be able to get a court hearing in pretty short order and an injunction and a declaration from the court not too long after that, hopefully, that'll basically forbid the agency from requiring that the fisherman fund the FC monitors. Just yesterday, we conferred with some of the government lawyers who are involved in this, and we filed a joint status report where the government has agreed to file a response brief later this week, and where we've agreed to try to get a hearing probably next week, maybe a little bit after that, hopefully.
There's a couple of people in politics here in Massachusetts, I think, that have raised some eyebrows, if not disappointed, in their role. One is currently working for NOAA, former mayor of New Bedford, John Bullard. I can understand the frustration. You know, somebody that was charged in defending the fishermen of New Bedford now finds himself on the end of NOAA, you know, making these impositions on this very same fishing fleet.
You know, it's hard for me to read minds, obviously. And I've talked to people who are more supportive and more sympathetic of Mr. Bullard. I've talked to people who are more hostile to him personally. It's hard to say also what the individual motivations might be. I think I've read comments from administrators in the press and after we filed the lawsuit saying, hey, look, the agency isn't trying to hurt the fishermen. The agency just doesn't have enough money to fund the FC monitors itself. But I mean, everyone agrees that the agency might not have money, but the fishermen don't have money too. And ultimately, if the agency doesn't have the money, it's the agency's priorities that have to give, not the fishermen who have to go out of business.
Well, I got very frustrated the last time around when, you know, you had John Kerry, Senator Kerry, you know, speaking on behalf of the fishermen, and across the aisle from him, representing Noah, was his brother, who he got the job for, representing the Commerce Department. You know,
is that so? I didn't know about that.
Cameron Curry was representing Noah, representing the Commerce Department. So it's a bit incestuous, and you feel like you're just getting the dog and pony show if you're a fisherman or somebody, you know, rooting for this fishing fleet. And the solution, typically in Washington, and it was disappointing, their solution wasn't to fix the problem, but to then find funds to pay for the monitors for a time. I assume those funds have dried up, and now the cost is back on the fishing, the fleet themselves. Is that how it came back to them? These funds dried up?
Yeah, basically, it's hard to tell the story of what happened from an appropriations angle, because I think, the Senate Appropriations Committee has taken the position, and it's actually written the agency to say, hey, look, we've appropriated the funds for you. You better fund this program instead of shifting the burden onto the agency. And the agency just kind of blew them off, and we set out some of that history in our filings from this week. As far as I can tell, what's happened is more or less this. The agency has taken the position for a while that it has the theoretical ability under the law to force the industry to undertake these costs if the agency ever did run out of money. Over the course of this year, those rumblings have just kind of gotten heavier and heavier, until finally, just a month ago, November 10th, the agency announces, look, the money is out. We're going to be running out of money in a few weeks from now. You're going to have to start kicking in your money in January. Now, that's a little bit up in the air right now because, as I understand it, one of the companies that provides these monitors had a little bit more money left in its contract than others. And so it's possible that the companies will be able to kind of shift around the money to get a few more days, a few more weeks maybe of funding out of it before it shifts onto the agency. But I mean, at this stage, the hourglass is running out, and it's only going to be a matter of weeks before these fishermen are required to carry this cost.
I mean, at some point, what's the ultimate? What are you looking to do here? I mean, I know I realize the fishing industry is a very unique one, but this is a unique imposition.
Well, it is a unique imposition, but the principles involved in it are kind of they're actually pretty far reaching. So what we'd really like. So we can think of it in terms of goals on two levels. One of them is kind of a specific goal, and the other one is kind of a broader goal. The specific goal is to protect our clients and to protect the industry, hopefully, from this particular agency overreach. We could do that with a declaration from the court saying, look, the agency doesn't have the power to require industry funding in this case. And that's great. We'd be obviously excited to get that. The deeper principle, though, and this is one of the things that really gets my organization going, is that there are deep principles of constitutional law involved here. One of those principles is that federal administrative agencies only have the power and the authorities that Congress has granted them. And the other is that even when Congress grants agencies those authorities, the agency doesn't have the power to do stuff that Congress hasn't funded. So if we can also, so by protecting the fishermen from this particular imposition by the agency, we'd also be able to kind of vindicate those principles, which would have much potentially broader application to a whole range of things that agencies are undertaking now or that they might undertake in the future.
Yeah, I think this does have wide-ranging implications. Can you imagine if they started putting, for instance, people from the Labor Department into factories or into workplaces and making employers pay for them.
Sort of Soviet.
It really is.
If you could say that. It's like having a federal political officer in whatever kind of workplace you can imagine.
Sure, because this is just the dolphin's nose under the tent, so to speak.
I
got to tell you though.
So to speak.
Honestly, I don't see how you can look at it any other way than coercion. And for a former mayor of New Bedford, for John Boland to say, you know, we're not trying to punish anybody, we don't have the money, well, then drop the imposition. Drop the enforcement. Drop the observers.
You know what this reminds me of? There's a John Mellencamp song about auctioning off farmland, and the guy says to the local auctioneer, just because it's your job doesn't make it right, you know?
Right.
I mean, these bureaucrats want to protect their jobs. That's their ultimate motivation, and they're looking for any way they can get the dollars through the door that ends up in their pockets.
Right, and they forget, it seems to me, that when they're the agency, but they're there to serve the industry, and they're there to serve the public. And if they've got administrative goals and administrative priorities that they want to pursue, well, then that's very nice. But they're limited by the needs of the industry they regulate by what Congress has decided to give them. They can't sort of go rogue this way.
All right, Stephen Schwartz, cause of action.
Yeah, that's right.
Where can people go and look at your organization online?
Causeofaction.org. That's causeofaction.org.
Where are you guys located?
Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm glad you're doing this, and hopefully, you know, you're clanging, you know, the alarm loud enough where people listen, because it can be frustrating dealing with these big bureaucracies.
Oh, it sure is. It's frustrating for a lot of people, and we've been getting a lot of good attention for this, and hopefully we can get a good result, and hopefully also draw some attention to what the agency's up to and the problems it's creating for the industry.
Well, as things develop in meaningful, you know, visible ways, we'd love to think that you can come back on and update us.
I'd absolutely love to. Invite me back anytime. I'd love to talk more.
Stephen Schwartz, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
508-996-0500.